Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redman. Today's interview is with artist Anthony Burks. Anthony is a native of West Palm Beach, Florida, where he lives with his wife, Trina Slade Burks. Anthony and Trina have built a successful business where they create pop-up art shows, providing exhibit opportunities for up to 70 artists at a time. Anthony is also a fine artist who works with colored pencils, watercolors, and charcoal, and he produces many series of amazing artwork. Today, I'm mostly going to talk to Anthony about his own artwork, but we'll touch on the origins of his group art shows. Next week, I'm speaking with his wife, Trina, and we'll delve deeply into their business, which has developed a great reputation in Palm Beach County of supporting and promoting artists through shows, business lectures, and many income opportunities. And full disclosure, I've worked with Anthony and Trina on their shows. I've helped them with their calls to artists, juring in and hanging all the art, formatting the artist statements, and manning the shows. They're both wonderful to work with, and they're so giving to all the artists in producing these great shows. Be sure and listen to next week's episode when I speak with his wife, Trina, about how their business began and how it evolved to be a well-known art show creator. But today, we're starting with Anthony. So be sure to check out my website to see examples of his art, which is really amazing. This is Anthony Burks. Hi, Anthony. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
All right. I've known Anthony for a long time, and I've been a great admirer of his work. So I would like to first start out, since this is just an audio podcast, can you describe what type of art you make and the materials that you use? And I will also have photos of your art on my website for the show notes of this.
Okay. Well, what type of artist I am? I am all over the place. I really never put a title on myself as what type of art that I do. But I love working with color pencil, pastel, watercolor. So I do a little mixture of everything, but my main medium is color pencil. That's what I started out with.
When did you first discover that you had a love of art? Did you start as a young boy?
Yes, I pretty much used to follow my mom. My mom used to do a lot of coloring and coloring books when I was a child. So I would say 3 years old. I really felt the ability to be an artist. So really young.
All right. And so your mother encouraged you? Was she an artist as well?
She never claimed to be, but what she can do to a coloring book is amazing. So I think she's an artist, but she never came out and stated that she's an artist.
Yeah, I don't know why people are so afraid to say that out loud. So were you able to take art classes in a school setting when you were in grammar school and high school?
I did a lot of art in junior high to high school. Elementary was more me just entering contests, and I used to win them, but that was as far as I went with the elementary. But as I got into junior high, I kind of skipped art. I wanted to play drums, and so I focused on that more than the art in my seventh grade. But once I didn't do well enough to the teachers, I decided to switch to a art class, and from there is history.
Okay, so that was the standard elective choices that you did: band or probably chorus or art.
And
you,
yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, and where did you grow up?
Here in Florida, West Palm Beach, Florida. I've been here all my life.
All right. Okay, so you're a Florida native. When you got to high school, did the classes get a little more advanced in the art that you were taking?
I would say my ninth grade year, it was more the basic stuff. And the great thing that I had was that I had a teacher who basically did not follow some type of program. She just basically allowed us to be who we wanted to be. So she allowed us to all pick our own medium that we felt that was strong for us. And she just let us ride with it. And I pretty much did it through, I say, my 10th to my 12th grade year.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's amazing. What was the medium? What did you choose at that point? Was it colored pencils already?
Color pencils.
All right. That's great.
Color pencil.
I know you went to art school after that. Was it immediately after high school?
Yes, I went to Fort Lauderdale Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale. And I did for commercial art, not fine art.
Oh, okay.
And I pretty much felt that I needed to be a fine artist more than a commercial artist. Even though I do, for my career, you know, making money wise, I do logos and t-shirt designs and stuff like that.
Okay.
To, you know, earn a little money. But my main thing is fine art. I love fine art.
Okay. So when, at the time that you were in school, what were the commercial classes? What type of things did you take?
Oh, we basically learned, which is obsolete right now. We learned how to use, the computer by doing basically points. Everything was a Y and an X. And, they taught us how to, you know, do photography. Mostly a lot of medium type things like billboards and all that kind of things. We got into learning how to do press type, which is not used anymore.
Right.
Cause everything's done on the computer, but we had hands on with everything. So, which I felt was great because it allowed me to learn the different things that needed to be a good graphic artist today.
Right. You have a broad range of skills then.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Was graphic art the first type of job that you had when you completed the program?
Yes. That was funny. I had a, hard time finding a job, and one of my instructors told me that, you know, the sign industry is a good place to go, which I'm saying, nah, I don't want to do signs. That's not what I want to do. I wanted to basically work for some type of firm. And he just said, well, that's where the money is at right now. So I recommend you go apply for a job working at a sign company. So after searching and looking and doors getting closed in my face, I decided to go to a sign company, and I was there for 20 some years.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that long. Wow.
Yes.
You know, but I guess it was good advice if nobody else was hiring at that point. There weren't advertising agencies or something.
Yeah, it was, again, it was tough coming out of college to find something that was in my field.
Okay. Yeah. But at that point, you had the desire to do fine art, but were you selling fine art at the very early stages after graduation?
No.
Okay.
It took a while for my fine art career to start off. I had a lot of bumps in the road, which sadly had to do a lot with, especially here in West Palm, sadly, with race. I ran into a lot of unnecessary closed doors. I didn't get an opportunity to show what I was capable of doing. So, I took my lumps and my bumps, but I stayed true to who I am as an artist. And right now I'm pleased with what the outcome was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. You've got a very well-known name and a successful career. At some point, well, you kept making fine art though, even though doors were closing to you. Is that right?
Oh yes. I mean,
yeah, okay.
this is a gift. I tell any artist out there or someone that wants to become an artist, I say, you have to be born with this. It's a gift to me. I feel that you have to have some creative ability to do art, especially fine art, because it's just myself. I eat sleep art. I mean, I see art in my sleep. I see art when I'm walking, looking in the shadow. It just comes to me. I cannot run from it.
I love that. So you tooled away at a 20-year career in the sign business, and that was paying the bills. Was it, I know that you and your wife started making your own opportunities and having art shows and selling art. Was that the first way you were able to sell art, was by you creating a home show?
Yes. Actually, I sold a few pieces before we started doing these shows here at my home. But the reason why we even started doing the shows at homes that I was getting rejected from galleries or opportunities to show my art. So Trina and I decided that, you know, once we get our home, when we first built our home, that we were going to basically turn it into a space to, you know, show my art and other artists. So I would say my first sale of art was, I would say, about 5 years after leaving college.
Okay.
I had a gentleman that came in to my home, our apartment that we lived in, and he bought 7 pieces.
Wow.
And it was a good thing and a bad thing, because being the artist, we really cherish our art. So it's like, you know, my family was happy, but I'm sitting in the corner with a little puppy face.
Oh.
She was like, "What is wrong with you?" I said, "You know, you just made a great sale." I said, "Well, you know, my babies are going somewhere that I don't know where they're going." So, you know, it was kind of like bittersweet for me.
Right. Yeah. Careful again, what you wish for, I guess.
But that's
what you had been working for toward this whole time. Yeah.
Oh, yes. But it all worked out at the end. Again, it's I always tell especially young artists that, you know, all over for you to get your name out there, it'll become something. Someone has to own it. So you need to let it go. And it's never going anywhere, because it's always going to be in you. I could pretty much close my eyes and picture all the pieces that I pretty much sold over the years and remember them. So they're not gone anywhere. They're always going to be with me.
Right.
So I made it easy for me to sell them.
Okay. Well, good, good. That's a good way to teach the students. Okay. So your very first sale was actually with a collector, essentially, because he bought 7 pieces. I was going to ask you the question, when did you realize people were really collecting your work? But I guess that was from the very start.
Yeah, I mean, he was a collector. He actually invited me to his home that the pieces was going to be hung, and his house was a gallery. So it was beautiful just to see my work among the rest of these pieces.
Oh, nice. Is he local?
He was local. He actually just passed, recently. He was a judge out of New York, and he had this pretty much his summer home here in Jupiter. And, he passed, I would say about 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. Did he continue to purchase art from you over the years?
No. He spent so much time up north. So when he did come down, he only came to a couple of my shows. And actually, before he passed, he said he was getting ready to buy some more pieces. But, you know, he passed, so he never had a chance to collect anymore.
Okay. All right. You started making opportunities for yourself. You met this man, you invited him into your home and then your apartment. And then later, when you and your wife made a family home, you started hosting shows there. What year was that? And how many years was that after graduation from art school?
I say that all happened about 11 years ago.
11 years. 11 years.
When we started doing our home shows here at our home, okay. 11 years ago.
Okay.
But as for the pieces I sold, that was, I want to say that was 1992 or 93.
Okay.
That the pieces sold to the collector.
During that period between 92 and 11 years ago, where were you selling your art? Did you eventually start putting them in galleries? Were you accepted yet?
No, I never really got selected into any galleries. I tried, and I continue trying. I just basically word of mouth, or I do I used to do a lot of poetry events, because that's where I got my inspiration from. I used to go to the poetry events and listen to the artists do their pieces, and from there I have my sketchbook, and when they tell their story, I was drawing the story.
Oh, wow.
And, I created a whole series off of, just going to poetry events and listening to them speak their words.
And where did you show these portraits?
Anywhere, everywhere. Okay. Anywhere that I was allowed to display, libraries, coffee houses. You know, I had a few little small galleries that took my work in, but no one major. And, again, the reason why we started the home shows, because I was having such a hard time out there selling art, to the point I almost gave up. Not give up being an artist, but give up trying to be a fine artist as for selling my art.
Okay.
So that's why we started the home shows here at our home, that, you know, I had a place to now display my art in any way or fashion that I wanted to and not be judged on it.
Okay. When you did your first home show, was it just your art, or did you already start inviting other artists?
Oh, no, we had our first show, I think we had, I want to say we invited 13 artists.
Oh, okay. All right.
We mixed it up into jewelry artists, fine artists, some craft artists, and what we did was clear off our walls, offered from the living room to the bike studio, we cleared the walls and we invited the artists, and they all had their own little corner, their own wall, and just they sold from there, and we did a private showing, and then we did a public showing the next day.
And what was your turnout?
Believe it or not, it was not very large, but we sold, every artist sold that day.
Oh, that's great.
Myself, personally, I sold, I think, 4 original pieces of art that day.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes. So that started everything. I mean, from there, it's like, this got to happen. I mean, this is wonderful. And I'm not sharing it with anyone. This is, you know, my profit that I made. And one thing we did with the other artists, we didn't charge them anything. We basically was collecting. I mean, we wanted to see their clients. We wanted them to invite their clients to the show. So my way of making any type of money was basically hopefully their clients will come in and buy from my art as well as the artists themselves.
Okay, that makes sense. That's a good model. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And you continue to do these home shows?
Yes. We did, I'd say, about 3 more at the home. And then we got invited to a storefront through, I would say the name wrong, EG2.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's EG2 or EG squared. Yeah.
EG, I think it's EG2.
Okay.
And they basically had a space in Northwood, and they could not, most of their artists was young youth, kids. So they said nighttime was closed. So they said that, you know, Trina and I would like to come in and do a showcase there. They, you know, they give us the key to do what we need to do. And it just started from there.
And the people who ran EG2, how did they meet you? Had they come into one of your home shows?
Actually, they were, 2 of the teachers did a show with us.
Okay.
Glenn Barefoot and Paul, I always call him Paul, I don't remember his name, but they did a show with us at the house, and they said, you know, they said they had a space that we can do this outside of our home. And again, that's pretty much how Continuum got started. That's how all our main bigger events started, is us getting invited to do a showcase at the spot, which is now Relish. Relish is to own up that space now in Northwood. And we basically, again, brought in, I think we had about 20 artists that was part of that show. And they all had their own separate space, just like the house. Mm-hmm. And what made our show special is that Trina and I used to cook. We treated it like, I always say, most black families, Sunday was a special day.
Okay.
And that's when we make our feasts. So we made sure that we did the same thing for the art shows. We did the whole, all the sudden meals that we can create, and that brought in a lot of people. They got to eat a little bit of our soul food.
So, oh, that's great. So anybody who walked into this gallery, this wasn't just for the artists. They could eat your family meal that you made. So you just extended your home down to this gallery. You were doing the same type of hospitality you did at your home.
Yes.
That's fabulous. For the past 11 years, what you and Trina have done is you've incorporated yourselves as a business, and you do these types of gallery shows quite often, a couple of years sometimes. I know I'm doing an interview with Trina as well, and she talked at length about the gallery shows. So I want to go back to your art. I've seen your art for quite a few years, and I've noticed that you do some pieces of art in a series. And the first one that I remember seeing is your Rooted Ground series. Would that be the first one that you would call a series? And can
No.
you tell us about it? Okay, what was the first?
I did a series of masks. I used to do a lot of African masks back when I got started in my fine art career. And everything is always a series. I do series from 3. I always try to use all art, and I'm for some crazy reason when I do my series. But I always work in series. Everything I do is a series. When I was in high school, I used to do flowers. I used to do a bunch of roses for some crazy reason. And then I got into, you know, I didn't listen to heavy metal or any kind of rock music. I used to love doing Kiss, the Kiss group. I used to draw them all day and all night, never heard not one record.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Well, I had a good friend of mine who used to draw me at lunchtime. He's always drawing, always asking, what is this? And he showed me pictures and stuff. So I'm like, wow, that's cool. They dress up in these costumes. That'd be a cool thing to draw. So I started drawing these KISS posters, as a kid in high school. And, from there, again, when I said earlier that I don't really have a style or anything, cause everything it comes to me. Like I said, I dream, or I can be doing a conversation right now, which I'm trying to avoid now, because if I pick up a pen right now, I'm going to be in trouble.
It
draws me in. And, once it's in my head, I have to get it out. And, so I always try to create my art more for me than trying to create for someone else. Because it's harder for me to do something that someone else has asked me to do. That's why when it came to doing the graphic design work, that was, you know, I hated it because I had to follow the directions of someone else's telling me how to design something that they want. And I always wind up doing something that they asked me to do, and then I do what I would like to do, and they wind up picking what I decided to do instead of what they chose. Yes, but it was so hard trying to convince them at the beginning, you know, let me just take the wings and let me just take off with it. But I always had to follow their directions, and I always create what they ask, and then I'm like, oh, now I got to get this out of my head. So I create my own piece for them to look at, and they always, and I would say about 85% of the chance they pick what I decided to do on the side instead of what they asked for. So again, this is a gift, and I cherish it. My series, it's just, once I get done with the series, I it's hard for me to go back and do another piece after I say this series is closed. Even though my business partner, she kind of entices me to do other things that, you know, if something is selling or doing well, you know, why stop? And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. Once I lose the feeling for the piece, I can't continue doing this series. So again, I always break it up. But as for series, I have many, many series. I actually have pieces in my collection that no one really ever seen. Unless you come to my home, I shouldn't say that. When you come to my home, you get to see a lot more than you will ever see outside of my home of who I am as an artist. I did, again, start off with doing the mask, and I did a series of those. And then I had a series called Mud Cloth. And I would take from back in Africa how they spoke to each other was through these beautiful cloths and symbols. So I decided to interpret these symbols myself by creating an image in the middle and then telling the story about that image in the mud cloth. Mm-hmm. That was my most successful series. That series I sold a lot of work from.
Oh, that's great.
And then I started a new series after that called Mother Nature. And that is the series that sold to the gentleman that I was speaking about earlier. He bought pretty much the whole series. I do have a few of them left right now, but he pretty much bought my whole beginning series of the Mother Nature series. And from there, again, just carry on and carry on. Then the Rooted Ground came into place. And the story about the Rooted Ground, that series actually came out of my frustration.
Oh, really?
After getting rejected by so many galleries or not being able to really express myself as an artist, Trina, my wife, came to me and she's like, you know, stop beating yourself up. Sadly, you have to come up with a niche or something that you can do that people can buy anytime. So I'm like, I don't want to do a commercial piece. You know, I want to continue doing my stories.
Right.
And she said, well, just think about it. So again, she put it in my head. So I had to get it out, and I created, we always go back and forth on this. I created four pieces, just using the basic colors, primary colors. And we did a show that, I didn't sign the pieces. I just left them empty. And I was doing another show in the same building, and I left those pieces with Trina at another station. And we had a person come in, they loved it, and they kept saying, wow, I can see myself in these roots. And it just took off after that. I just started to do so many of them at one time that I had stopped, and I took a 5-year break from doing the Rooted Grounds.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes, which you would never know, but I took, because I did so many.
Yeah.
I took a serious break from it, and things like Anthony, people are asking for these pieces, why are you stopping? And I said, I just don't have the feeling for it anymore. And she said, well, just, you know, try it out for a little bit. See if you can come up with some ideas. That's when I started doing the people and the animals in the bottom of the trees. And basically the story goes now is when people ask me about, you know, to get them a story about the trees, is I always tell them it's not about the animal or the person. It's more about the tree. The tree is basically telling the story of that person or that animal who laid underneath it, ate off it, birthed underneath it, died underneath it. It's telling the story that day. Or that tree is in that mindset, I wish I could be that person today. So it's telling the stories in its roots. So I always tell people, when you own on the roots of my trees, they only belong to you, because I don't really do too many duplicates of the main trees. I do sell prints of my big originals, but as for the smaller trees, to me, those are going to be the treasure of my legacy, because everybody will own one of my trees. And most of the time, they either get it for free, or it's just something that I just do while I'm sitting, you know, at the table, or I'm at shows and just need, you know, something to create. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, these roots are your roots. No one will own this tree. This is the only tree that's going to be made of the style you have right now, or the color. Right. So you always get a true Anthony Burt's original that no one else will own but you.
That's nice. That's nice. So it sounds to me like you have evolved in that you do like these again.
Yes. It came back. I had all my series, that series came back. So I am now deep into it right now.
Okay. All right. And the Rooted Ground, is that watercolor, the paint on it? Or do you use acrylics as well?
Everything. It's,
okay.
Watercolor, color pencil, pastel, acrylic, you name it, I do it. If, you know, I mix it all up. It's just what I feel at the moment, or what I have sitting in front of me. If I just have color pencils in front of me, I probably do all color pencil.
Okay.
Or if I have watercolors, I just do a bunch of watercolors, and then I mix it up with the color pencil. Because always, the tree is always on the color pencil. Because it's, you know, I love to be able to do my fine lines with the pencils.
I gotcha. Okay. I've seen you at many a show where you're sitting at a table contentedly coloring and making something new. And what I've always been impressed with is the speed. Not that that matters, that you can do things quickly, but just I can tell that you've got it in your head and it's coming out. You're not having to sit there and think about it and pause and reflect, because it's already come to you before you've even put the pencil on the page, is what it seems to me.
To be honest with you, I don't know how other artists handle this here, which I have heard from other artists. It's a scary moment before I touch a drawing or a painting that I do. Yes, it doesn't come. I mean, I have it in my head, but as most artists, we doubt ourselves that we won't be able to create what we have in our head. Because we always wanted to be perfect. We always wanted to basically do it from A to B, you know, exactly what we have in our head. And it's almost like I have to get into my little trance. And once I literally get started, is no stopping me. That's when I go in my little world, Trina says.
Yeah.
I put this block around me, and no matter who's standing behind me, in front of me, or even talking to me, the main focus is the drawing that I'm working on or the painting that I'm working on.
Okay. Well, I know that you've done a lot of teaching to children. What do you say to the students when they are at that point, when they say, well, I don't know how to start. Well, I've got an idea, but I can't begin. What advice do you give them?
The advice I give most young artists is that go with your heart. I mean, I had an art teacher once told me, that you can't go into doing your art to please another person. You have to really keep your soul involved. And so when I tell any young person, I just tell them, put your heart in it. Don't worry about the person who's looking at it or the person who might either praise it or criticize it. At the end of the day, you have to be the one to love it. You have to be the one that cherishes it, because again, you're the creator and it's your game. So I always tell you, even you mess up, that's your mess up. So what? You know, you don't have to erase it. You don't have to change it because you feel that someone might not, you know, might judge you in a negative form. And I tell them too, if you want to be a fine artist, you got to take the critics. You got to take the hard knocks and you know, and those people that are going to come and sometimes don't understand why you're doing what you're doing. My mom don't understand half the stuff that I'm doing, but she has no problem with telling me. She had told me in the Harvey, Anthony, I don't know where you were going with this here, okay? But, you know, but she has found a way to love me now. So now she's on Facebook, sadly, and she basically posts likes and loves and kisses to me every day.
That's nice. That's
but no, great. I try to encourage any young artists and older artists that I speak to, follow your heart and just do you. Don't worry about the outcome at the end. As long as you're happy with it, then it's perfect.
That sounds like great advice. Yeah. And I know that a lot of the students that you advise and teach, they're actually applying to, I don't know if audition is the right word, but they're applying for the art schools, the high school and the middle school that we have. That's very competitive in our county.
Yes.
So that sounds like great advice when you're telling them go with your heart and don't worry about the grading of it.
Yes. Oh, I tell them in a heartbeat, because again, sadly, they have taken the arts out of the schools and now they put it into one school.
Yeah.
And it's so sad, because I was one of the adjudicators for 4 years until they changed the rules. So they don't allow any private teachers anymore. Just the teacher that works at the school that does the judging. I used to see those beautiful faces come in, and then I see those beautiful just turn into frowns when they're walking out because they feel that they didn't do enough or they could have done better. And the sad part is that the schools is too small to accept a lot of the great artists that are going to become one day.
Right.
And that's the part that really turned me crazy, especially for like the inner cities. The young kids there don't have any training. They don't have anyone to encourage them to keep up their craft or work a little hard on some things. So their chances of getting into these schools are very, very slim. So I try to, when I first joined the Army Art Center, it wasn't to work at the Army Art Center. I was trying to create a program outside in some of the recreation centers or Boys and Girls Clubs to bring artists there to give these kids some type of a tool to go into this audition and have a chance to get into the school. Because again, I've seen a lot of in the city walk in there when they had to have portfolios and I'm looking at notebook paper and, you know, them just drawing whatever they, you know, see on television or something. And it was just not enough to get them into the school, even though they need to be in the school because they're still artists. And it's sad that they have to compete with each other to get into this one school.
Right. The entire county. Right. It's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So not only do I try to teach at the Army Art Center myself, I try to, if I know of any kid that need help and their parents cannot afford to either go into the Army Art Center, you know, they have scholarships for kids.
Oh, that's
I try
great.
To encourage them when I do other programs. I try to encourage some of the kids I feel that has an opportunity, I mean, a chance to get into the school to take advantage of the scholarships. So again, I myself, I adore all the kids I run into, and I try to encourage them to, if they don't get into the school, to keep your art going because it's part of you.
Right. You're hoping that they won't get discouraged and go away from art just because they didn't get into this one school.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm glad I didn't have that problem. I mean, again, I had art from junior high to high school every year as an elective. And I just don't think they do enough of that now. So these kids are basically scrambling to, you know, follow their dreams, and it's kind of hard on them sometimes.
Yeah, that's too bad. So how much of your schedule is teaching right now?
I, on the average, teach 3 days a week. I teach on Wednesdays and Thursdays at the Armory, and I teach at Easel Art on Saturdays.
Oh, okay. One of the art supply stores in town? Okay.
Yes, in Lee Park.
Okay. And do you teach to adults as well or just children?
I teach anyone who wants to learn. I do private lessons as well. Normally, I do those private sections at, I actually go to, we have a little coffee shop over here in Northwood called Harold's. And I set up my little meetings and do my classes there for my private lessons.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
I try to support the local business. So I go there to drink my tea and basically make sure that whoever I'm teaching go grab something as well. So I try to support my neighbors.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Yeah. And you're talking about Northwood Village, which is the place, site of their first, I can't remember the name, the EG2 gallery that used to be there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Another motif in your artwork is you do a lot of animals and birds. Where did that come about? Did you have a love of animals when you were a child?
Actually, I can't remember if I did or didn't. My animals are, oh my God, the animals are deeper than anything, because I am telling this story. I don't know if you ever really looked at my animals really close. The eyes is the first thing I start. And from there, I pour actually my most work into the eyes. I want to make those eyes basically tell the story of what the animal was going through at the time I was creating it, either good or bad. And I don't know. It's again one of those things that, you know, this gift that I have, you know, I'm not here just to create art. I'm here to help these animals or help someone understand that, you know, they are in danger. They need help, and we are destroying everything surrounding them. And I feel that I have this gift that I have, and I have to find a way to express myself to let people know that, you know, that they are important, because I always tell people all the time that once they're gone, we're next.
Right.
So we have to really think strongly on that. I'm not an environmental person. I've never claimed I'm going to go count the birds or, you know when they're extinct or not. I just, when they hit me or when I feel image I see, I just have to express it the best of my ability and tell that story.
Okay, so let me ask you about this other artwork that I've seen of yours. You just talked about the eyes is the first thing that you start with. You did a series where the animals have a cloth covering their eyes. What were you trying to depict with those?
Well, I kind of left a little bit out. The reason I really got deep into the environmental part, I had an environmental person, we're not named, came into me, and she not attacked me, but she was saying to me, why am I focusing on so many African animals when my native animals are dying as well or going through something? Why you don't paint them?
You mean the ones in the state of Florida?
State of Florida.
Okay.
And she was basically introducing me to maybe create a calendar or do a series to basically sell for purchase pretty much. And I had to let her know that, like I've been telling you, is that my art don't form that way. I don't create because someone's asking me to create. I said to her very nicely, I said, can you please tell me what Florida have done for me? And she got quiet.
Hmm.
And I said to her, I said, well, as a black male living here and going through things I shouldn't have to go through as an artist or as a human being, I said to her, I said, so it's kind of hard for me to focus on my native if I feel that I'm not getting accepted here. So she stopped and paused for a minute, and she shed a tear because she was shocked for what I was telling her. But me being this artist, you and I collected everything, she put it in my head. And so I worked on this series called Endangered Species of Florida.
Okay.
And I did 10 pieces. I did 9 pieces, but my 10th piece was representing me as an African-American person. So I introduced it into the series when I did the show, and people was like, wow, so where are you going here? You got this lion and this eagle stretched out with the flight ripped and his fist and this guy standing in the middle. And the piece was called Identity Crisis. And I feel that these animals are in danger, and so am I.
Oh, wow.
So that was the start of me really focusing on the part of we need to save these animals. Mm-hmm. And as I was doing my research on the animals that I created for the series, I started hearing stories as I'm, you know, on Facebook or me just checking through, you know, the internet that these poor animals are dying. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that in a lot of the videos is that they always cover the animal eyes before they help them, basically. Basically when they go to, you know, either try to mark them to get a count on how many they are or just help them out health-wise, they cover these animals' eyes up and they calm down.
Oh, okay.
I felt that I needed to give this series showing that you can't cover these animals' eyes anymore because they're not food anymore. They know their lives are in danger. They know that these things, that their species are going to disappear one day. So by you covering their eyes up anymore, they still are crying for you to help them in a different way other than just marking them to make a count. You know, give them a place to live. Give them something to hope, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So that series is called Calm No More.
Oh, okay.
And I focus on all the big cats because to me, those are the ones that are really leaving here because, you know, they have nowhere to go. Their land's been taken from them. Everything's been taken from them. Their food's been taken from them. And so that's the series I started off with, doing the big cats. And I think I did 5 in the series.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to do any more. I might stretch it out to some of the other animals. But right now, those are the ones in the series.
Okay. All right. So the animals, you've done research to get the coloring right and that type of thing. Do you do that for the birds too? Are you doing your bird pictures the actual color of the birds in the wild, or are you making up your own?
I'm making them own.
That's what I thought.
I that is just my way of actually. I would say I'm poking at some of the bird lovers out there because they're really, really strong on making sure you make these birds exactly how they look.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I always tell them when I meet someone that, you know, say, why you change the color of the birds? I say, you know, I sat on a plate God for a day. And maybe that bird wanted to be a different color today. Maybe it wanted to dress different today. So I'm pepping it out. So I'm changing the color, but I'm still not changing the beauty of that bird. That bird is still is beauty in its own, you know, and so that's the whole me changing the colors of the birds. It's just me to poke a little fun at some of the bird collectors out there that basically
like
come
that
at me as a regular.
That's great. So your bird pictures, I think you're kind of famous for them because you've done so many in some of your shows, but you also do some collaborations. I know you do the hummingbirds with Craig McInnes. Tell me about collaborations in an actual piece of art. How do you schedule that? How do you do that?
Everything's about me is about art. And I feel that art is our family, and we should be able to share each other's thoughts and minds and just see what we can come up with. Actually, the piece that I did with Craig actually came from, he asked me to do a piece for his, it's one of his band mates was having treatment for cancer. So we was on a fundraiser for him. And I said to him, I said, you know, I would love to do this piece for you. I said, but hope that you can, because I love his style of how he does his abstracts. Mm-hmm. I said, if I do this bird, you have to do the back end of this film. Any way you want, I don't care. I just need, I want you to give me what you feeling about the piece that you're looking at. So he went in to do what he normally do. He loved doing his abstracts. The piece, I forgot the name of the piece. Wow. But basically the bird was representing the person's soul. And the abstract part was representing the cancer of his friend or his bandmate.
Okay.
And that he is escaping. A hummingbird is only so tiny, you know, it's able to escape whatever's messing with him at the time. So that's what the whole piece came from, is it's basically showing that no matter what you're going through, there's always hope. And that's how that piece came along. But other pieces that I've done, which I've done many, I just want to see what other people can come up with. I want to see if you can take what I created and make it even better, you know? And believe it or not, I get turned down by a lot of artists. They don't like to share.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was shocked about that, but yes, I got rejected a lot. Some of them out of respect, you know, they're like, oh, Anthony, you know, I can't touch your piece, you know, I love your art, and I just can't, you know, I don't know if I can give it justice. And I'm like, I just want you just to have fun with it, just enjoy, you know, creating things with me, you know. So I always, again, encourage artists just to let go.
Yeah.
Don't be so tight, you know. So I have a series called Cover Girls, and that series is, I didn't know how to represent the female and their bodies. I didn't want to disrespect them, so I decided to do a few nudes, and I said, you know what, this piece is not done unless a woman touch it. She's given me permission to continue doing the nudes. So I will find a female artist, and I will ask them to finish the piece. So I will start the nude in charcoal, and I add some watercolor on the bottom just to give them an idea of where they can start, what they want to do, which is normally a dress of some sort.
Okay.
And I give them, you know, not permission. I said, I'm asking permission from you to release this piece. So I want you to do whatever you want to do to it. And I've done quite a few pieces that that looks very nice, which I have not done a show on yet. I haven't really had a chance to display all of them because I was trying to get 10 pieces all together. I think I have four. I got 5 pieces right now. So
okay.
I want to do 10. So if there's any women out there listening to this who are artists and want to do a collaboration with me, let me know. I will create a piece, start a piece, and then you can finish it any way you want.
Oh, that's great. Okay. All righty. Okay. So, yes, it sounds like you love doing collaborations. You don't necessarily get a answer in the affirmative when you talk to people, but mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Not all the time, but I mean, I have, you know, me and Craig is continuing doing our collaboration pieces on the birds. We did quite a few so far.
Yeah.
And, again, my Cover Girl series is started. I need to finish it.
Okay.
It's been a good 5 years now since I started the series. I'm still looking.
Was it 5 different female artists who did the collaboration, who finished it
with
you?
I have 2, I have 3, artists that did with me, and I have 2 that did 2 pieces with me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you also do a lot of portraits of women, just the faces. What was the first one of those that you did?
Aize. We have a good friend, Kianga. That's her daughter. And that series started, I don't know, because again, one of those things just popped in my head one day. And I really do not like doing portraits. Because it's so hard to do a person correct. You're always going to have something wrong. You know, so either nose is going to be not right, or eye or something. So I always try to figure out, how can I get this out of my head? I got this series in my head I need to complete. And that series is called Natural Beauty. And I started doing profiles because I didn't have to do the whole face.
Okay.
So I had to do one eye, half a lip, and a nose.
You didn't have to match the eyes?
Yes. So I always tell people, because I have people that run up to me all the time, can you do my portrait? No. but I had this series that came to me. The reason why I did the first female, she had these earrings on one day, was of a butterfly. I'm like, wow, that is neat. And I'm like, I gotta do this series now. I got this series in my head. I gotta get this out. So I, where I approach the female to that do is I, you know, walk up to them. I ask them, you know, is this okay? I do your portrait. I would basically post it on Facebook or Instagram and show you the, as I complete it, if you give me permission to do your piece. And, I basically make it part of them. I ask them what their favorite color is. So I try to find a butterfly to represent the color that I created. And if you notice, as the style has gone, it went from me doing full color to me just doing charcoal with some tint of color. Because I love my females. It's your beauty don't need any color.
Okay.
You know, your beauty is inside and out. So I don't need to add any color to show your beauty. So all my females are black and white now, and the natural part come in, and this is so funny. Trina changed her hairstyle. Trina used to get her hair relaxed and all these chemicals in her hair. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this with the pieces of art. You have to have natural hair, or words, nothing can be done to your hair other than you just putting some type of oil or something in there just to treat it. I want the natural beauty of you as a female. So that's how the series became Natural Beauty.
Right.
And basically the butterfly is representing the other beauty, because the butterfly does need its colors, because that's the way they hide from the predators. That's how they mate. So they need their colors to tell their story. But as for the female, they don't need the color, because they already beautiful to me.
Oh, very nice. Are they actually sitting for you, or are you doing it from a photo or a memory?
When I first started out, I was doing it just from me going on Facebook or seeing someone and asking for permission to do their portraits. So now I'm going out actually taking a picture of myself and basically walking up to strangers and asking them, is it, you know, showing them my business card, and basically showing them on Facebook on Instagram what I do. And that way that would make them a little more comfortable thinking I'm not a predator.
Right.
To this, you know, whatever.
Doing some people watching for inspiration.
Yeah, because I, right now I'm doing the portraits, but tomorrow I might not be doing the portraits. So right now it's in me and it's burning my soul. So I have to continue doing it. I mean, you can't see it now, but I actually got a piece I'm working on. I just started this morning.
I can see it behind you on the Skype call that we're doing. Yeah.
Beautiful. I just started that this morning. It was bugging me 7 o'clock this morning, so I got up and I started.
Oh my
gosh. Pretty much what you see was done this morning.
Wow. Like I said, you do work fast.
I don't know if you ever saw the movie, not the movie, but the series called Hero. It was a TV series.
I remember it.
And there was, if you remember the artist that was on there that was telling the future of the different heroes, his eyes roll back and he goes into this trance and he creates and he doesn't stop until it's finished and his eyes open and he's back to normal. Well, that's me.
Oh, wow.
Once I get out of that fear of touching the paper and able to go in and touch that piece of paper and start this drawing, I go into my little trance and I pretty much stay in there. And the only thing that I pretty much do is I turn my music on and I do my art while I'm listening to my music and I go into my little world.
So what happens when you only get half of the face done and you have an appointment or something, you have to leave?
Oh, like now?
To abandon it. Like right now, we had an appointment to talk.
It was hard.
Is it hard to get back into it? Or are you just dying to get
It's hard to get back into it. Because again, it's still the fear thing. It's still that I'm not going to make it right. I'm not going to make it where it needs to look like. So I got to start the routine all over again. I got to get in my little prep mode, and I got to say, you know what, Anthony, just go at it. But once I touch the paper, it's on again.
Okay. All right. Well, here's hoping you get back into it easily when we're done. You've also done some profile portraits of some famous ladies as well. Do you want to talk about those?
Yes. I did Maya Angelou, and when she passed, and that was more a tribute to Trina, because that's one of her favorite poets out there. And it just, again, I had to show her beauty, and I did her in black and white as well. And I did some research, and I believe her favorite color was pink. So I found a pink butterfly, and I basically dressed it, the background up with the pink wing of the butterfly on top of putting the butterfly on her ear, earlobe. Mm-hmm. As for, I have a few singers out there, Nina Simone, that created, and Sade is one of my favorite artists out there. I got one more artist I have to do one day, and that's actually two, Jill Scott and Erykah Badu. But so many people have done their portraits of her, of them, that I'm like, kind of taking the steam out of it, me creating them. And I actually did it wasn't a portrait of Obama. The day that he got nominated, I'm like, I had the same problem. That, man, everybody's doing a portrait of Obama. So I did it in a different way. I did it in the sense of, what did he do when he got nominated? When everything was done, all the spotlight, everybody has gone home and he's in his study or whatever, what would he be doing? So I created this jazz player playing the bass, and I dressed his clothing as if he was running for president. Basically, I put the button of Obama's campaign, and I dressed him up in a white suit, a red tie and a blue shirt. And that's my portrait of Obama.
Oh, that's great. And where is that? Do you still own it?
Yeah, I still own it. Right. You probably seen it, but you didn't never knew the title of it.
Yeah,
I but next time you see, next time you come over, you probably say, "Oh, I didn't know that was a piece." But yeah, that was my way of interpreting what I thought about Obama and what I think that he would be doing, which I felt that he would probably go in the room with a little glass or something and smoke a cigar and just do some jazz.
Yeah, that's great. did you ever make a portrait of Michelle Obama?
No, again, my problem is everybody have done one.
Yeah.
I found a great photo of her, and I was going to do her, and I will probably have to find a way to get in contact with her or find out what her favorite color so I can do her butterfly. Right. So she's on my radar.
Okay.
I just haven't figured out how I'm going to be able to create her that I'm happy with it.
Okay. So you're really into, you're still in the middle of this natural beauty series. Are there any other series that are inside you that you think might come out soon?
Wow. Right at the second, no.
No?
I am doing, actually, most of the portraits I have done lately, which I didn't pay attention to, has been artists that I have ran into or spoke with. And I've been creating them, even though that wasn't my goal to do. That's what I've been doing. Actually, the young lady I'm working on right now, I met her on Facebook, but I saw her in person at New Orleans when Trina and I went to the Essence Festival.
Oh, just recently. Yeah.
Yes. And I bought one of her prints from her. I wanted one of her originals, but I couldn't afford it. So I bought a print from her. And again, I went up to her and said, is it possible I take your photograph? I would love to create you one day. So I am creating her right now.
Oh, that's great.
I would say the last six pieces I've done has been artists. And again, I'm just, again, I don't know. I just, again, it's just something that hits me. Right now, I don't have any new series in my head this second. Not saying that I won't after we get off the thing, since you asked me the question. but I know I'm in the process of doing some more animals because I'm running out. I actually had a very good season this year.
Great. I have
sold quite a few of my animals the last few months.
Oh, good.
So
congratulations.
Thank you. I need to create some more. And then I have a bird show coming up, which I have some pieces that I already have for the show. But knowing who I am, I have to give a brand new piece. So I'm probably going to get through with this piece I'm working on now. And I'm probably going to do a few more birds before the show comes up.
Where will that be held?
That is at, make sure I got the college right, is Florida Atlantic.
Okay.
Over off of Okeechobee. They have a little gallery space in their library. Sam Perry is the curator of the show.
Okay.
So yes, myself and I think five other artists, can we, give him a few pieces of birds so he can put this series together? That's going to be September 14th is the show.
Okay. Well, I'll get some more details from you and I'll put it in the show notes on my website for this. One of the things I want to point out is that you and your wife, Trina, have the business called ATB Fine Artists and Designers. And not to diminish your contributions to your business, because they are huge, but Trina is the driving force, I would say. Am I?
Yes.
I'm correct in saying that? Okay.
Yes, yes, so, yes.
the week after your interview will air, I will do an interview with Trina. And so I purposely have not talked at length about your business because I talked about it at length with Trina. But I know that your business is doing one other show that's coming up in September called the African Diaspora.
Yes.
Can you tell me just briefly about that show and what that means to you?
That show actually came from, I did a show down in Miami around Art Basel time. And they had a satellite show called Out of Africa. And I can say I never did a show with mostly all black artists. I'm not going to use the word African American. I'm going to say black artists because they were all over the place.
Okay.
And I went to the show. I had a few pieces in the show. And I got there and I'm like, not knowing what I was going to, you know, see, everybody that was in the room looked like me. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know that this is this. Because when I do a lot of shows here in West Palm and other places, mostly I'm the only black artist that's there.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow. And what made it special, I called them my elders. My elders surrounded me. And because I was a newcomer, because most of the artists that was in the show was from Miami.
Okay.
And they said, wow, we love your work. You know, where are you from? And I'm like, well, I'm right up the street. I'm from West Palm. They said, wow, how do we didn't know nothing about you? And I said, I do what I do. And I always tell people my goal was my kids and my family was first before my art. Not me creating it, but promoting it and putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make sure my boys got to school and learned how to be men. So I didn't do too many major shows outside of West Palm Beach. And so they got me in this corner and they say, well, you know, I love your work, but they looked at my prices. It's like, you need to work on your prices. You're making us look bad. And I'm like, okay, I didn't know what they was talking about at the beginning. It's like, well, your prices are very, very, very low. And so they kind of gave me a scale of how I needed to promote my art and how I need to start raising my prices. They didn't say go raise it to a crazy number. They just said you need to really think about every year or when you sell a piece of art that you need to now think about that your value is going up.
Right.
And okay. That you need to express it that way. And I have so far since that show. And that was 6 years ago when I did the show.
Ah, okay.
And so I'm like, wow. I say it's so strange that I come here to Miami and see this show, but I never seen another show like this in my part of Florida. Mm-hmm. So I just got into the Army Art Center, and I went to the director at the time, Taya. I forgot her last name. She's going to hear me too. She was the director at the time, and I went to her and I said, you know, I have this show in mind that I would love to create, and I need a space. Will you think the Army will take on this show? And she said, well, we'll look into it, but just give me, some kind of a idea of what you're trying to do, and we'll look into it. So I had, you know, my beautiful partner, she wrote up a good, piece for it, and we introduced it to the Army, and they first said no, because they didn't have the space.
Oh, but, I didn't know you had gotten a no first. Okay, go on.
Yeah, because they didn't have the space. I mean, they didn't have us, they couldn't chuck us in because they didn't have the year was already filled up with all the shows.
Right, so space on the calendar. Yeah.
Yes, and so by whole, somebody dropped out. So they needed to fill this space. So they took on the responsibility of creating everything that we do today ourselves, the booklet and even the title, because we wasn't going to call it African Diaspora. That was the Armory words. That wasn't my words, because I, be honest with you, I never liked titles, and I just wanted... I can't remember what Trina and I was going to come up with. I don't know what Trina wrote on the proposal as well. So the Armory is the reason why we have the name Diaspora, African Diaspora, which everybody now uses. Well, they were using before the Armory came up with it. So it's like, oh my goodness, this show is going to blend in with all the other shows out there. So we mixed it with what we used to do at our home, collaboration.
Okay.
So the show is called Collaboration African Diaspora. That's the name of the show.
Great. So it's acting more like a continuation of what you and Trina did in your home for many years.
Yes. Cause we try to do the same thing. What we took it from that show there, actually that was our first major big show outside of our home and doing the storefront was the Armory. So we don't like doing the wine and cheese show. So we found a partner, which they're not open anymore, sadly. It was a bakery here in Northwood. Mm-hmm.
But once again, using local businesses.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Always. We sat down with them. They came up with a beautiful menu. Of course, the menu was more than what we can afford, and the Armory didn't have money to really support it, but the business side, they're going to help us anyway. So we did the same little thing like we did our shows. We did a spread, you know, we had this Caribbean food all over the place.
Oh, nice.
It was beautiful. And I have to say that show, we had, I think 30 some, black artists that was in the show. And on top of that, the Armory had a second show that they was putting together for a preacher who, I believe he's out of, Belgrade.
Uh huh.
He took these photos of, this church. And so he had all these images, of his work photos. And then he brought in the choir that was at the church to come perform at the Diaspora show.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
And I have to say that was one of my best shows ever that we created. Just because we opened up some doors. There was a lot of the artists here that didn't show their work. They was either afraid or just thought they won't get accepted. We kind of helped them make some big changes in their lives as an artist. And not only that, we educated a lot of people, because we when we do our shows, we don't just do a one night in the closing. We do every weekend.
Yeah.
So we had a Black Film Festival that was sponsored by the Deltas, and we had a lunch and lecture which Trina set up with local artists and people who are in the arts some form of fashion, business wise or education wise. And we did that every weekend. We had a different event going on, and the Omni was surprised because, according to their records, we had the largest show ever
at
the Omni Art Center. And we was clocking at the time, or ticking. My son was at the door, and he stopped at 5:88, I believe.
That is impressive.
And we actually sold a lot of work that night, believe it or not. So that even made it more special that we was able to do this show, all black artists. We educated everyone. We sold artwork. So I got to say that it was one of my greatest shows ever that I was part of.
That's wonderful. And so what you did by going your experience down at the show in Miami, and you called them your elders, and they were really teaching you and helping you on how you should proceed with the promotion of your art and the pricing. Then you, in turn, did that with these artists up at the Armory Art Center event.
Yes.
And I,
yes.
You know, and that's really what, that's what you and Trina's business does. You've taken the word promote and expanded it to mean so much more when you're promoting artists and promoting their work that they do. And I think that's tremendous. So you and Trina have quite a great reputation in Palm Beach County for what you've done for other artists.
Well, thank you. I mean, again, it's just the love of arts and our art family. We tell anybody, once you join us, you are part of our family now.
Right.
And what, if we can do anything to help you advance yourself or do what necessary, we are there for you. But we always tell all the artists too is that we are on our way up. We're not doing sideways. So if you are going to knock on that door, you need to be serious about what you are coming to knock on the door for. Don't just knock on the door to try to think that we're going to sell your art or make you famous or whatever. You have to put some work in as well as we are putting the work in, you know, into trying to develop who you are as an artist.
Right. Right. Well, I think we've covered an awful lot. Where can people find you? Do you have an artist's website?
Yes. AnthonyBurtsCollection.com.
Okay.
And I'm on Instagram, Facebook,
okay,
LinkedIn. I have them all. I'm there.
Just, all right.
which you can find all that on my website.
Okay. And I know that you also sell some products, too. You have some beautiful scarves that have your artwork, and I know you have the Ethnic Mermaid coloring book.
Yes.
Are those things available on your website as well?
Yes, everything is on my website.
Okay.
You can find all those beautiful things on AnthonyBurtsCollection.com.
Okay, all right. I will put that on the show notes. Anthony, thank you so much for talking with me today. I think people will really love getting to know a new artist. I've always thought that you need to have a national presence. So let's see how this podcast can reach some people with your art. So thank you very much.
And thank you for what you do as well.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing Anthony talk about his many art series and the art shows that he puts on with his wife, Trina. I've got lots of photos of Anthony's art on the show notes on my website and links to some of the things we talked about. Be sure and listen to next week's episode when I talk with his wife, Trina Slade Burks. Here are some great takeaways from this episode. Number one, if you are having trouble getting your own artwork seen, why don't you start with a home show? Number two, invite other artists to display at a home show, and you and they will reap the benefits of inviting all of your collectors. Number three, other artists will also assist in running the show, from helping hang up the artwork to promoting the event. Number four, add something to the show that suits your personality and traditions. Anthony and his wife cooked a great meal for the artists and attendees in his family tradition of hosting friends for Sunday dinners. Number five, consider making your artwork in a series so that you will have pieces that'll go well together in a show. You may even have a collector that'll want to buy multiple pieces of the series because they'll go together in their home. You can only be so lucky, right? Number six, ask other artists to collaborate with you on a piece of art. It might be a fun experience, it might expand how you think about your own work, and it may double the number of people who will see your art, as you'll benefit from their list of clients as well. Number seven, when hosting shows, use local businesses for food and drinks. And you can go a little further and use local businesses for entertainment and music. Number 8, give back to your community by teaching classes to students who may not have the opportunity of art classes in school anymore. Yeah, it's just a shame how much they're cutting art in school. So see what you can do to give back. All right, that was just a great conversation. I hope Anthony has inspired you to make your own art opportunities. Don't be afraid to offer your own home show. Coming up toward the holidays would be a great time to host an open house with a few of your artist friends. Start small, but you may find that it's a huge success and you'll be inspired to approach businesses about doing larger pop-up galleries. In this week's business episode, which I'll be posting on Friday, I'll be talking about how you can host your own home show. The following week, I'll talk about what it takes to run a pop-up gallery in a storefront. Be sure and listen to my interview with Anthony's wife, Trina, as well, as she talks about their business and all the shows they've hosted. As always, I post a lot of photos of the artist's artwork in my show notes for the episode. Be sure and check out the notes for Anthony's show. You've just got to see his artwork to understand what he was talking about today. And you can also check out his website for more, which is at anthonyburkscollection.com. If you are enjoying these podcasts, be sure to go on iTunes and leave me a review. And thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I'm Suzanne Redman. See you next time.